Dr. Herbert Byerly.
Right, Mr. Chicago, Montebaum.
So, do we have a subject today?
Healing.
The healing, that's right.
Healing myself.
That's what my subject is all the time, healing. And it is a misnomer. The subject of healing is a misnomer. Because, can anyone tell me why?
We're perfectly whole and healed.
A little louder?
We're perfectly already whole and healed.
We are whole and perfect right now. Now there is where the rub comes in. There is where the problem comes in. Do you believe that you are whole and perfect right now? If you believe it, then you should be teaching this course. But that is the truth. That is the only truth that there is. We can go into our scientific studies and we can read in our scientific journals all about the cell, the single cell. The single cell that is joined together in the sperm and the egg and comes out as a cell, and every cell is able to do what? It is able to be any part of the body that it will. And when a cell is taken by, not necessarily there, but right now, they can take one of our cells right now, and they can put it in a petri dish, and they can keep it alive with the nutrients that are necessary for it, and it will live eternally. It will never die. The cells within them do not have the technique or the desire to die. They do not have the purpose to die. Their purpose is to live. Now, somewhere along the line, we as human beings have instructed ourselves that they should die. We have instructed ourselves that they are not perfect, that they are not eternal, that they are not immortal, that they're not designed to live forever. Somewhere we have instructed ourselves this case. And because we have done that, our cells transmit this information from one cell to the other. Now, how this is done, other scientists tell us that it is through the nervous system, through the lymphatic glands, through the lymphatic fluid that goes through the body. And the lymphatic fluid that goes through the body is constantly informing the body of what your age is, of what your condition is, of what your attitude is about yourself. And all of these things are, so to speak, mental activities that are going on within our body. These are not physical things that are going on. These are mental things. The mental things then make the physical things happen. So our attitude, our belief, our age, I'm 25, our age is transmitted through our body to our cells, you know, through our lymphatic fluids and lymphatic glands movements. This is just something that the Scientific American magazine and many of the other Discovery magazines have said over the years, and they've had scientific research done on it. Now, the big problem comes not in what is being missing, but in what we're not doing. What we are not doing is we are not saying to our body that I am young and dynamic and vital and alive and perfect and beautiful. We're saying, I'm sick. We're saying, I'm tired. We're saying, I don't have enough to eat. We're saying all these silly things. And our body listens to us. Our body listens to us very closely and responds to what it is. I had a group of doctors and their children come up to Meal Meditations up in Southern California, the ranch I had before we had the current 104 acres. And at Meal Meditations, Dr. Edmund Bordeaux-Seque had the property, we leased it from him. And on the property were all sorts of stories about the ancient beings, philosophers, healers, people, the story of Jesus, the story of Moses, the story of the Essenes, lots of beautiful things. And so I took this group of doctors and their families around for a tour of the property, as I did with many other people. And the one doctor, medical doctor, he had a son, about 8, and the son said to his dad, "Dad, I'm thirsty." And we were about a third of the way through the path, a 2-mile path. And so the doctor turned to me and he said, "Well, his son has a condition that he needs water, you know." And I said, "May I speak to your son?" And the doctor said, "Sure." So I spoke to his son and I said, "Young man, did you know that your body is almost all water? Your body is almost all water. It's over 90-some% of water. It's just water. Now, you can draw upon that water anytime you want and have a drink and not be thirsty." And I talked to him maybe for about 5 minutes, and the whole group heard it too. And in the process, the kid says, "Oh, okay. Okay, no problem." And so we walked around the entire path, and it was, you know, like maybe 11 o'clock in the morning. It was warm out there. And we came in from the path, and when we came in, the kids were playing in the swimming pool and running around and so forth. And the boy says, "Dad, I'm going to go over to the pool." And his father says, "Don't you want a drink of water?" "Why?" You see, he had changed his whole attitude about his need for water. He changed his whole attitude about that he was, what's the term, glycemic or whatever it is where you need water. Hypoglycemic or whatever.
Thirsty.
Hmm?
Thirsty.
Thirsty, thank you. I like simple words too. So he was thirsty. And he didn't even need it. He didn't even need it. He had changed, and his dad, the medical doctor, he says, "My God, I would have never believed it." You know, because he was always so in need of it. And so were all his other patients, you know. Now, the doctor is not going to tell his other patients what I told him, because then he wouldn't have his patients. But you see, this is what goes. And this is what happens. This is what happens. We live in our body, which is controlled by our mind. We live in our body, which is controlled by our thoughts, by our attitudes. And health is totally responsive to what is our thought and our attitude about ourselves. Now, what is your thought and attitude about yourself? Do you want to live in a healthy, happy, harmonious body? Then you have to begin thinking healthy, happy, harmonious thoughts. And the only way you can think healthy, happy, harmonious thoughts is to think healthy, happy, harmonious thoughts. And why do you think healthy, happy, harmonious thoughts? Because you're healthy, happy, and harmonious, so why bother thinking healthy, happy, and harmonious thoughts? Well, when you are healthy, happy, and harmonious, you don't think that you need to think about healthy, happy, harmonious thoughts, because you are healthy, happy, and harmonious. And you say, "Herb, it's a good thing you're remembering those words in that order." But that is the truth. When you are feeling good, you don't think of saying, "I live in my healthy, happy, harmonious body." When you are rich, you don't think of saying, "I am rich." When you are poor, you sure think of saying, "I'm poor," don't you? And when you're sick, you sure think of saying, "I'm sick. I don't feel good. Things aren't going well for me." Just at the time when we should be using our positive statements for their best and most powerful use, we use the opposite. We use the appearance, and we say, "The appearance is so real." Well, the appearance is not real. the appearance is only an illusion that today is and tomorrow may still be there and the next day may still be there unless we have let it go. We don't need it. We don't need these appearances. We don't need these illusions. Now, dogs have a wonderful healing agency about themselves. A dog will have an injury, and he'll lick that injury, and go and get down to the raw skin, and you have to stop him from doing it, because he wants to just keep going, and he would lick his foot right off if you gave him an opportunity to do it. And you are doing the same thing. You're saying, I'm sick, and you don't let the well attitude get going. So the minute you can stop the dog from licking, then he has done a good job. But then the healing takes place. But so long as the dog licks the wound, the healing doesn't take place because he kills himself. You are the same way. So long as you're licking at the fact that you're poor or you're sick, or you got a problem, the healing can't take place because you're giving your attention to the problem. Now, do you want to give your attention to the wholeness? You want to give your attention to the reality that you are, to the perfection that you are? Then how do you start? Well, we like to say, I'm whole and perfect. 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 Herb, that's just what I was thinking. I'm whole and perfect. 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 I walked my 3-mile path around the meal meditation, that's years ago, around the University of Healing campus in Campbell, and I walk it every morning, and I attempt to get in several times a day going around, but I walk it. And Rex, my golden retriever, walks with me, and I walk around and I say, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. And I say, everything is in divine order. All is working out in divine order. And if anybody is with me, they'll say, why are you saying that? And I say, that's because that's the truth. Well, then if it's the truth, it's already done. You don't have to say it. I say it just to keep my mind fresh on the fact that I'm whole and perfect. And I walk into the house, I'm whole and perfect. I run around my path virtually, you know, and I just wear shoes. And people say, well, don't you get a sunburn? You know, you're naked walking around the path. You're out in the middle of the day in the early part. No, why? Why? I'm whole and perfect. Why? I accept only as much of the sun as I want. Look at all these black people in Africa, you know? Do you know black people can get a sunburn? Mm-hmm. Why? It's in their mind. Black people are living out in the sun all day long. The kids are playing out in the sun all day long. They never get a sunburn. But some black people get sunburned because it's in their mind. And white people, too, they get sunburns because it's in their mind. And some people, they don't because it's in their mind that they are whole and perfect at all times. You say, well, Herb, that just isn't true. That just isn't true. Oh, yes, it is. I was talking to a lady yesterday, and she says, you know, I have a little excess weight, and so I float very well. And I said, floating is not weight. Most people who have excess weight sink because they think they're fat and they're heavy and they sink. And some people who are just a stick, a bone, you know, they just float just like a leaf on the water. And others who are a bone, they sink. It's all our consciousness. It's our consciousness about our body and our ability to float. Now, you say, well, that's not true. Oh, yes, it is. I've worked with a lot of little children in training them how to swim. And they say, oh, I'll drown. I say, hey, nobody ever drowned it who was around me. And they haven't. And I say, you know, everybody who goes swimming with me and learns how to swim with me floats just like a bubble. And their biggest problem is to dive under the water, because they dive down and poof, up they come again right away, you know. And these kids get this idea in their mind, and do you know they do that? That's just what they do. They dive down, poof, they come right up, you know. My son, he had trouble learning how to swim because he was always coming up. He never stayed down long enough to swim to do much of the good. So I had somebody else train him. But everybody else I could train perfectly because they immediately did everything I told them to do. And they did it beautifully. And they had such fun. You jump into the pond and you say, I float like a bird. And then you dive down and boom, up you come. And you swim along, all thought. All thought. And you say, hey, that can't be so. That can't be so. The aerodynamic principles of these things just are not so. Well, isn't it interesting how people say the bumblebee cannot fly because it's so heavy? Well, they forget that a bumblebee doesn't fly. Its wings fly. Its wings keep it in equilibrium as it goes up. And it flies easily and beautifully. And it hovers. It does everything. But it has nothing to do with its weight. You know the jumbo jets? You know the buses, what do they call them? Air buses in France that they make them? These monstrous things that hold, you know, 600 people? Wow! Oh, fantastic. You see, we don't need to know all of the rules of aerodynamics, of the body, of techniques of healing. All we have to do is know who we are. And you are whole and perfect right now. You were born whole and perfect. You were designed whole and perfect. You were whole and perfect from the get-go. Everything about you is whole and perfect. Your body is whole and perfect. Now, do you want to demonstrate, reveal, experience what whole and perfect means in your body? Do you want to? Okay. If you want to, if a body, want a body that is well and strong, he must think a perfect body, think it all day long. Make your mind acknowledge your body perfect, perfectly. You have a perfect body, even you and me. See, that's the way it goes. Acknowledge a perfect body. Think a perfect body. Live a perfect body. These are beautiful songs we have in our Joy Song book about positive thinking. And we wonder why we have a perfect body. Well, I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I am God, God I am. I have such a wonderful memory. I am God, God I am. I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful body. I have such a wonderful body. We should be a little more creative about this, but I have such a wonderful body. I have such a wonderful body. When I'm walking my path, I'm singing these songs. I'm thinking these thoughts. And I feel great. I feel wonderful. And every year, I'm 25 again. Every year. It's just wonderful to be 25 again every year. And the only reason I'm 25 again every year is because I accept the fact that I'm 25 every year. Right? Yes. And Richard has known me since I've been 25. And he says, Herb, you haven't changed a bit. You may have got a little snow on the top, but you haven't changed a bit. And that's just because I like you all to think that you too can be 25. But live in your perfect body. Claim it, claim it, claim it. Name it, claim it every day. Every day. Now, if you have children in your life, they're the perfect expression of that. They never grow up. You've seen Peter Pan, you know. You've seen Mary Poppins. You've seen the gang. And I don't want to grow up. I don't want to grow up. Now, what happened with Tinkerbell? Remember? Tinkerbell got jealous of Peter Pan, and so she hid his shadow. And Peter Pan was so unhappy, and Tinkerbell finally realized that you can't do that. You can't do that. And so she let Peter Pan's shadow out of the drawer, and it went back to Peter Pan. He nailed it onto his feet so it wouldn't get lost again. But you see, this is what you want to do. You want to be yourself all the time. You've lost sight, perhaps, of the idea that you are living in your perfect ideal spirit, mind, and body. And you want to nail that onto your feet. Get that shadow back there. Get that awareness that you are now that. Now, part of being whole and perfect is having a beautiful imagination. A beautiful imagination. With a beautiful imagination, you are young in spirit, young in heart, young in attitude, young in body, young in mind. You are dynamic. But it takes a magical attitude of your mind. It takes a magical attitude of your thinking about yourself. Now, can you think of yourself climbing a tree? Oh, here, this lady, this princess here. She was going through some problems, and then all of a sudden, one day she says, I am going to walk up the mountain. And so everyone said to her, who had any intelligence at all, she didn't have any intelligence, and they said to her, don't you realize you shouldn't do this, you're not able to do this, you're not in a condition to do this? She says, I'm going up the mountain. Were you with her, Brad?
Larry and Hattie.
Larry and Hattie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Larry and Hattie here?
No.
Okay. Hi, Larry and Hattie. So, you can't prove me wrong. So, she went up the mountain with Larry and Hattie, and listen to this. Do you know what she did? She danced up the mountain. You would think that she was Tinkerbell herself, dancing up the mountain.
About three times.
And when she danced up the mountain, was she breathing hard? Not at all. I don't mean she wasn't breathing at all, but she was not breathing hard. She was breathing smoothly, wonderfully, magnificently, and she was just being herself. Now, many of you have a false idea of the facts of life, and Richard is probably the worst of you all. And you think that this spring chicken here is, let's say, 40 years old, 50 years old, 40 years old, 25, excuse me. She knows she's 25. But she was born centuries ago. She has lived an eternity. Remember them? See, right away he says, that's incredulous, son. And so, she has centuries of living in her, and in her mind she has these centuries of living. And she's walking up and down this mountain with these centuries of living. Now, only one thing we want to do with Miss, the Reverend Pamela Wengler, is to erase the present from her. And I don't mean the now, but erase the present. Because she is the allness. And sometimes she thinks she is the limitation of the present. And whenever she thinks she's a limitation of the present, then the allness is kaflooey. It's gone.
And I have to work hard.
Don't help me. So she thinks that she is the present, and you do too. Whenever you have an illness, whenever you have an unhappiness in your life or your experience, you're thinking in the present. But Herb, aren't we supposed to think in the now? Yes, we're supposed to think in the now, but not the present. The present is that moving, flowing experience of what word is it? What's the word? That we're overcoming or ignoring or going around? The illusions. The illusions, the appearances. Mm-hmm. They're not real. They're not real. And when she thinks of herself in the illusion, then she's got work to do. But she really doesn't, and do you know what her work is that she has to do? She has good words, but I always use my words, you know. Yeah. And her work is to train herself to live in the now. You see, if she lives in the now, there will be no past. There will be no illusions around you. There will be no appearances that are temporarily there. And all appearances are just temporary. They go away. When she lives in the now, she will be even more radiant than she appears to be now. Because she is hiding herself behind the illusions of the moment. Women do that oftentimes. They buy new dresses and new shoes and new clothing because it's the style. And then when the new style comes out, they put that in the closet and they buy the new style. And they say, well, goodness, you know, I should do this. And you do the same with your bodies. You say, oh, look at Princess Di, isn't she beautiful? You know, oh, look at Marilyn Monroe, isn't she lovely? Oh, look at Venus de Milo, isn't she great? You know, with the head and the arms, you know. But isn't she great? Now, who's great? Who's great? Those are limitations. A limitation like Marilyn Monroe? A lot of ladies would like to have a limitation like that, wouldn't they? Okay, but it's a limit. Yes, it's a limitation. We don't want any limitation. Now, we were talking this morning for a few minutes. What is the ideal? What is your ideal for yourself? What is your ideal body? And don't tell me you know what it is, because you don't. What is your ideal mind? What is your ideal beingness? What is your ideal for yourself? What is it? Now, you don't know. And you cannot know. Because I'll tell you why. The minute you are your ideal, you are your ideal. The minute that you are the ideal self of yourself that you are, you won't know it. And the reason you won't know it is because you are it. You cannot know what you are. Because when you are it, you are it. Now, if I say to you, you're a woman, you say, so? Big deal. If I say, you're a man, you say, I think you got your wires crossed a little bit there, don't you understand? You see, you argue with me. And if I say to you, you are a man-woman created by God in the first chapter of Genesis, you know, and then you are this perfection, this perfect being, this ideal being. But you see, you still haven't got it. The minute you got it, then you don't think about it. The minute you got it, you are it, and you live it, and you express it in everything you do. Now, when you go to your doctor, and your doctor says, what's your problem? And you say, I have a broken leg. And he says, no problem. No problem to you, doctor, but I got a broken leg. No, no problem. And so the doctor does what he has to do and puts a cast on the leg and it heals up. Now, how does the doctor see your leg? Does the doctor work on your leg as a broken leg, or does he work on your leg as a perfect leg? Who would answer that? He works on your leg as a perfect leg. If he doesn't, you don't want him as your doctor. If he's going to work on your broken leg, then he is going to be broken leg consciousness for you. You want him working on your perfect leg. Doctor, I would like to have you work on my perfect leg here. And the doctor says, yes, I think we can take care of that. That's just fine, yeah. Yeah, I can see your perfect leg. I know the perfect leg that you have, yeah. That's great. But think about it. Now, what about you? Do we each look at our perfect leg, or do we look at the sick leg? Do we look at the illusion, which is temporary and passing, or do we look at the now, which is the reality that we are? You say, well, this may be my reality, which I am, but I still have this illusion that's standing right there in front of me, you know. And it's far from whole and perfect. What am I going to do about it? Well, you can say, okay, what am I going to do about it? I'm going to lie. I'm going to lie to the appearances. And I'm going to speak to the truth. How about that? I'm going to lie to the appearances and say, I have a perfect leg. I'm going to speak to the truth. I have a perfect leg. Now, if I speak to the appearances, oh, my leg, and I go around limping around, my leg, and I have crutches and I have these things, and pretty soon your leg cooperates and gives you all sorts of maladies that make it not a happy leg. But where is your attention? Wherever your thought is, that's your experience. I'm teaching you fundamental psychology here. Fundamental psychology of words. And you want to be very careful. How many of you saw the show Babe and the pig, the little pig? Well, Babe is a little pig. And Babe's rather erudite, rather well-spoken. And the farmer was a very honest man. And he wanted to enter Babe in the sheep corralling contest where the outstanding sheepdogs of the country were there. It was made in Australia. And so he wanted to enter Babe as a sheepdog, but Babe was not a sheepdog. Babe was a pig. And he just didn't want to lie, but he took Babe in there and presented Babe, and everybody sort of laughed and snickered as he walked with a pig on a leash. And he took the forms and he filled them out, and the form says contestant's name, you know. And so he wrote down Babe, rather pig, because he didn't know that the animal was called the pig Babe. But anyhow, and so the pig was entered. And then everyone laughed, and everyone thought, so bad, you know, I mean, you're going to make a fool of yourself. And the guy's wife was watching on television, oh, my husband, he'll go down there. But he and Babe had no problem. When it came time for them to go out there, they were self-confident. But there was another little kicker in there, a kicker that no one could have known about. And the kicker was, the sheep didn't want to do what Babe asked the sheep to do. They did it under different circumstances, but at this point they wouldn't do it. So one of the sheepdog ran back to the sheep that Babe had talked to and said, Babe wants to make her master look good and make this thing good. Help her. What can you do? And the sheep said, well, you got to promise you won't tell anybody else this, but we'll tell you the secret. And so the secret was, blah, 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 you know, and it was something that only a sheep would understand. And so the dog took that to the piggy, to little pig, and Babe, and said, Babe, this is what she said, blah, 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 blah. And so Babe went out there to the sheep and lined them all up. And she said, blah, 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 blah. And she said, where did you learn that? Where did you learn it? Babe said, are you going to do what I want you to do or not? Of course. But where did you learn that? That's my business. And so Babe led the sheep through everything. And at one point, the sheep with the red collars on had to step out of the circle. And Babe said, would you ladies with the red collars on please step out of the circle? Thank you. I would appreciate that very much. And they stepped out of the circle. And it was so beautifully done, so irrational, so Disneyland, you know, so stupidly crazy that it probably is what works. There probably is a phrase like that creatures can use with other creatures to have them cooperate with them and do things with them. Now you say, well, why did you spend so much time telling us the reiteration of the story of Babe? Well, because it is crazy. It is crazy. And you look at Cinderella, you look at Pinocchio, you look at all these stories that are called fairy tales. Those are not fairy tales. Those are real stories. Those are stories of real beings. Real beings having real experiences. And what happens to you and to me? We come a long way from those real experiences. We come a long way from those things that are the truth. And then we say to ourselves, why doesn't it work? It doesn't work because we don't have any imagination. You want to know one of the craziest imagination people in the world? Current. And that's this guy. He did the Big Bang Theory. Remember that? The Big Bang Theory. You know what the Big Bang Theory is? Anybody? Anybody not know what it is? The Big Bang Theory is where they tell how this planetary system began here on Earth. How this series of planets and Earth and Sun and stars and what have you were done. The scientist probably was telling a story to his children. They said, Daddy, how did everything begin? And Daddy said, well, I am a big scientist and I know all about these things, so I will tell you. There was a little Adam, and he was a lonely little Adam. He was all by himself, and he had nobody to play with, and he was a little Adam, and he was just so lonely. And he says, I could burst, I'm so lonely. And so the little Adam burst. And he burst, and he became the entire universe. And he burst to become the Milky Way, the solar system, all of the stars and the suns and the moons and everything that's out there. And it kept growing and growing and growing. And then our master Einstein had said in the theory of relativity and a few other theories that there is an end to the expansion of the universe. But that was when Einstein was 25 years old. When he was 22 and 23 years old, he wrote theories that said the universe is expandable beyond all limits of expandability. We cannot conceive of the outer breadth of the universe. We can't conceive how far it can go. And so now they have determined, the scientists, after hearing the Big Bang Theory and hearing Einstein's theory of relativity, they have determined that, I guess, it can go on. In other words, it will not go in on itself and come back into nothingness. It will just keep on going and going. And for 15 billion years, the scientists tell us that this has happened. 15 billion years? You got any idea what 15 billion years is? Bill Gates doesn't even know what that is, and he's got 30 billion. And stuff like that. But you see, this is the silly thing about life. This is the silly thing about all of us. We need imagination. We need to reach out into the farthest reaches of our possibilities. Now, do you, should you, could you, have you, the most beautiful body that ever existed? Is it the most healthy, perfect, wealthy, fantastic body that ever existed? Are you the most glorious being, expression of the ideal human being or divine being? Or being? Are you the most glorious expression? Can you be even grander than the Big Bang Theory? I mean, it didn't start with the scientists writing the Big Bang Theory. It started with Alice in Wonderland, do you remember? It didn't start there, it went back beyond that, the Brothers Grimm. All these fairy tale makers, all these people with Pinocchio, Rapunzel, let down your hair. I'll climb up, and then we'll, how do we get down after I'm up there? Well, that's all part of the wonderful fairy tales that we have. And then the silly, stupid, erratical, irrational things. But this is what we want to do in our minds. If I can encourage you to dream. You know, you think it's so much fun to have angels, you know? Angels are just a lower level attitude of the Big Bang Theory, you know? And you have all these other things that psychism brings to you, and all, well, you're teaching numerology next weekend, and all these other subjects. Hey, they're all games on this big playboard of the schoolyard that you're in. And they're good games. There's nothing wrong with them. But let's go for the gold. And to go for the gold is when you go for letting out all of your stops, letting out all of your imagination. Einstein wrote the first several treatises that he wrote, but he didn't publish them because he thought they were too silly. His friends all thought they were silly too. And then he wrote The Theory of Relativity, and he published that. And after he published that, then he thought, maybe I ought to publish the other things too, you know. But here, before he was 25 years of age, his mind was cooking so beautifully. And today, look what we're doing. We are taking every little sperm and egg that we produce around here, and we are putting it to work almost immediately. We're giving it a computer, you know? And every one of these little tiny babies has computers. And they're pressing buttons, and they're doing amazing things. And they're not afraid of their computer. We are afraid that we're going to lose something. Yeah. But the kids aren't. They say, hey, it's in there someplace. We'll pull it out. We'll find it. And we want that imagination. And that imagination, when a child works on a computer, he has no limitation to him. He has no limitation. He just gets in there and he plows away and he does what he can dream to and comes up with what he can think of. Like this little camera that she's looking at here. It's the JVC. And it's one of the first ones out now. It's brand new, you know, top of the mark, you know, latest object. And it's a camera which has 20 gigabytes of memory in it. Gigabytes, which means it has about 30 DVD film possibilities in it, John. Gigabytes in that little tiny thing. And in that little thing, it can also take pictures. It's a camcorder. It's a still camera. It does everything. I'm learning how to use it. If I were a kid, I'd learn it faster. But I am a kid. I got to get younger than 25, you know. So, but you see, the magic that is happening every day of our life, of these new possibilities that are jumping out in our face and saying, play with me, get excited about me, think of a few of your possibilities, a few of your dreams and your imagination, and let them come out and let them shine forth and let them be some reality. And hey, wholeness is the lowest one on the track, because that's just a fact. You are perfect. You are ideal. You have within you the ideal of everything. And we were talking about last night how do you know when a person is illumined or when a person is spiritually magnificent or is the greatest being you can ever imagine? How do you know? Now, we know about Hiroshima. Remember Hiroshima? Where they dropped the atomic bomb in Japan. Seems like just yesterday. But that was 50 years ago. Okay, they dropped the atomic bomb in Japan. And the atomic bomb, this was the first one. And they dropped it, and everything went boosh! Everything fell down for miles and miles around. Everything went just flat down to the ground. And a guy, a Japanese guy, yeah, too, yeah. A guy. See, not an American guy. We haven't taken him in to make him American proud of him. But he's a Japanese guy. This is in 1940, what was that? 45. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was in 1945. This guy had been meditating, or relaxing, or sleeping. But anyhow, he is really remarkable. He got up, and he walked away. Not anything else survived except him. And he walked away. And they checked him at the various check stations, and he had no radiation about him. He had no limitations about him. This is a true story. It's so true, it's unbelievable. Truth is usually unbelievable. But he was untouched. Now, why haven't we heard about that guy? Why haven't we found that he was the most spiritually illumined guy, most amazing fellow? He must have been to have been in the center of that thing, and when it went off, wow, what an amazing, and be untouched. His clothes were untouched. There was no radiation on his clothing. There was no radiation burns on his body of any type at all. How could he do that? Well, he didn't do that. He was a spiritually illumined being. He was a divine being. He, 10,000 can fall to one side, 1,000 to the other, but nothing shall come nigh unto you, you know. Daniel in the lion's den. He went in there. He said, okay, guys, we're in this together. And come on over and let me pet you. You'll be surprised how much fun it is. And so the morning came, and here all the lions were lying around Daniel, and he's petting him and telling him stories about his life. And he said, just a minute, I haven't finished my last story now. And I got to finish the story about my girlfriend and I, you know, and they're enjoying it so much, you know. And the king says, come out of there. But is that a joke? That's no joke. That's a story that's in the Bible. These are the stories that we read and hear and know about. And we know magic that takes place every moment of our life. Now, why doesn't that magic take place in your life? It does. It does. It takes place every moment in your life, but you haven't given it credit for taking place. You have thought to yourself, hey, this can't be so. This can't be so because I am only human. You're not only human. You are divine. You are the allness. You are the magic of the universe. You are now ready to sail. So open your mind, open your heart, open your thought to who you are, and start being it right now. Start living the life that you are right now. You know, they had cheating on some TV shows where you earn $64,000, remember that? And these guys had been found to have lied. And how silly. They didn't have to cheat. All you had to do is just say, I know that I know that I know, God in me knows the answer. This is the answer. They would have had it. They would have had it because they had it. They didn't need to have someone give them the answer or cheat. We don't ever have to cheat in life in any area. All we do is always tell the truth. The truth will blow their mind. The truth will astound them and astound everyone else. Begin to live in the truth. Now is the only moment there is. Now, play with me here now. Do you believe that? If you believe that, you're quite unusual. Scientists tell us, and it's easy to say the word scientist, you know, but this is written up in all these scientific journals. All time is now and all space is here. Philosophers have told us this for the beginning of time. How can that be? I mean, 10 minutes ago I was saying this, and 2 days ago I was here, and a year ago I was here, and now I'm here. What do you mean all time and space is here? Well, just that. We live in this instant. We live in this moment, in this time right now. We live only in this moment. Now, who we are living in this moment is what we are going to find out. But we live only in this moment, in this time right now. Now, if I were to say to you, remember your 25th birthday? For me, I'd have many to remember. But remember your 25th birthday? And you say, well, not really. Well, do you remember any birthday? Yeah, there was one that some silly things happened. So, silly things happened? Oh, okay. Now, on that birthday that some silly things happened, do you remember how old you were? Not really. Do you remember the silly things that happened? Yeah. Now, what was the silly thing that happened? Well, I was reaching over to pick up my cake. It was on the table, and I was going to take it and bring it to the dining room table. And it was on the kitchen table there. I was reaching over to pick it up, and a mouse ran by right in front of me. And I said, ah! And I dropped the cake on top of its top, and the mouse ran away. And I picked up the cake, and I said, you guys aren't going to believe this, but I flipped my cake because of my mouse. And they'll say, sure you did, sure you did. and I was a laughing stock of everything. But they ate the cake because it was so good, even from the bottom down. And you see, that you remember. Now, as I tell this story, which never happened, as I tell this story, can you visualize me telling it? Can you visualize the cake being flipped upside down? And can you imagine what your personal feelings were as you had that cake flipped upside down in your consciousness of me telling the story? My goodness sakes, if you could go through all that, just imagine what you could do without me. Just imagine what you could do with your own creative imagination. Look, who is it who created the pyramid? It certainly wasn't a bunch of architects. It was just thought, they liked working with Legos. They liked working with the Lego blocks, you know, putting one into the other and all perfectly fitted. They like that. All right. Now, what's another silly thing? Okay. How many of you have ever watched Star Trek? And did you ever watch the mean little boy who was on Star Trek and he brought Kirk and his gang down onto his planet and gave him a hard time and had him fight and so forth just for the fun of it? And he played God. And then at one point he was playing God and his mother on her spaceship or planet, wherever she was, communicated to her son so he and everyone else could hear it. And she says, Arnold, what are you doing? Are you giving people a hard time again? Arnold, you've got to stop that. I will not tolerate that. Arnold, you come home right now. Ma, I don't want to. You come home right now. Arnold, but... And Arnold was gone. And the game was over. But you see, can you believe it? As the game was happening, Kirk and his friends thought it was quite real. You know. And they looked for evidences that it was being done by a robot or some other type of thing, but they didn't realize that this boy had such a creative imagination that whatever he thought instantly happened. Well, this is what you do. This is what you do. No. I'm going to give you an examination. I'm going to give you this examination, and I know the answer. Today, when your day is over, and you go to your home, your final time to go to the home today, and you go to your home, before you go in your front door, pick up your front mat and see what is available for you under that front mat. What wonderful gift is available for you under your front mat? Now, I can just look at your faces and I can see how many of you will find something under that front mat. And how many will not find something?
Yes.
How many of you will find something? And how many of you are creative? How many of you are thinkers? How many of you are dreamers? You know? You remember Richard Bach? He wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Well, Richard Bach was a clown. He couldn't get along with his wife and seven children. He got a divorce. And he got separated. He had been with Flying Magazine writing for years for them, and he wrote a number of books on flying, which were passable. I enjoyed them. And then something got a hold of him and said, Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And he listened and said, yeah. And he couldn't figure out what it was. Finally, he wrote down the first half of the book. But because he was such a klutz, because he was such a, he didn't lift up the mat on the front porch to find the gift. Because he didn't, it was 7 years before the rest of the book came to him. Now that wasn't bad enough. The book was complete and perfect in every letter, just like Mozart's various musical pieces were complete every time he wrote one down. Okay, now, he was having trouble with his life, and his wife, and his world. And it was something like another 7 years before the book got published. He sent it out every place, and they told him it was childish, and it was immature, and it was not something they were interested in, and things like that. And finally, one publisher accepted it. Now, here it is, more than 14 years from the beginning of his book until he finally made his bucks. And he made his money. He made millions off of that book. Millions. He was a wealthy, wealthy, wealthy man. But he was so wealthy, he took his money and turned it over to a financial counselor to advise him in investing it. And he didn't pay attention to what the financial counselor was doing. And then the next thing he knew, he was without money. He had to go back to the selling of the books to get more money, because he lost it all. The counselor invested it unwisely, you might say. Now, why did Richard Bach get the privilege of writing that book? Because he's a writer, and he just wrote, and it came to him, so he wrote it down. And then after 7 years, then the rest of it came to him. He wrote it down. He was no great sheikhs. He was no great spiritually illumined being. I was at International Truth God Alliance with him as he was speaking, and people said, Richard Bach, tell us how you had your illumination. Tell us how you had your spiritual understanding. Tell us, great, wonderful, wise, and masterful being, you know, great, wonderful millionaire is what they were saying, you know. The book was good. The book was super. I delight in the book. But the thing is, it wasn't his. He was just a vehicle for it. He was just a vehicle for expressing it. Now, when Richard Bach makes Jonathan Livingston Seagull his, what's going to happen to him? What's going to happen to him?
He'll soar like the...
He will what?
He'll soar like the bird.
He will be able to do the things that Jonathan Livingston Seagull did. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because what Jonathan Livingston Seagull did is possible. Mm-hmm. Being at one point on the beach and another point on the beach in an instant, or another planet. See, your imagination is what builds everything. Who do you think these people were, these crazy, crazy, crazy people who built the first computers? They felt that to have all that information in a vehicle, you had to have a tremendous, tremendous, so many city blocks. Remember the early IBMs? And what did they call them? They had another name for them at that time, the early computers.
ENIAC.
ENIAC. Yeah, see some silly name like that. Well, now, the ENIAC people were ENIACs, you know. They built this masterful, monstrous gadget, and it did great things. It added two and two quickly, you know. But today, we have this little thing here, and it has so many little computers in it, and it takes pictures, changes pictures, it erases pictures, it moves pictures, it shortens pictures, it sends them out with email. It just does fantastic things in that little tiny box. But that's too big. That's too big. We have this little thing here. I used to have to carry rolls and rolls of tape recorder with me, and a machine to copy this with extra microphones that hang on, and the microphone. And here there's a little hole in the top of this machine which has the microphone in it. Now, look at your cell phone and search for the microphone on your cell phone. It's a little tiny hole on the bottom. And its ability to take your voice in perfect fidelity and carry it across the airway with how? I mean, you haven't got wires. You're out in the middle of the desert, and you can call anybody, any place, and talk to anybody around the world. It's amazing. But you see, it is only when you are allowing yourself to dream, when you're allowing yourself to live in your magnificence, in your magic, in the creativity of who you are. And the creativity of who you are is what? Is a whole and perfect being, a divine being. Now, where did the ENIAC people learn how to make their ENIAC, you know? Where did the first computer people learn to make their first computer? Where did the people learn how to put information into little tiny chips, no bigger than basically the tip of my finger, a little finger? They put information on there which is enough to fill, which is enough, and that's not correct, which is enough to, let's say, take
maybe 60 or 100 sets of encyclopedias. Sets. 100 different sets, if there were that many. But the volumes of the encyclopedia in that little tiny area. Now, how can that be? Well, I'm going to tell you. Better take notes. You might want to keep this forever. I'm going to tell you. It came right out of here. It came right out of here, how to do it. And then, if you think that's not exciting enough, think of our hackers who go in there and make things misalign and make things work improperly and become a burden and have go from one computer to another computer to another computer all by just a few little coded sentences, you might say, and do all these silly things. It's amazing. Now, if they can do that so creatively, so destructively, as we call it, why can we not do something so creatively, so beneficially, that it is something which has an immunity built into it, where it is untouchable by anything unlike itself? Isn't that interesting? If we can create the hacker who creates that which messes up the computer, why can't we create the smacker who creates things that bless the computer and help the computer to remain in its original purity and integrity? How about that, huh? To remain in its original purity and integrity, where it cannot be touched by any outside agency. It is merely a vehicle of receptivity. Now, let's go a step further. Okay? If that's the case, and we want the computer chip information storage form to retain its original purity and integrity, where did the idea come from? Right in here. And where is our original purity and integrity? Right in here. We are the allness of the universe now. We are the isness of the universe now. We have all the knowledge that the universe has. We have all the knowledge that could ever exist or will ever exist or did ever exist. We have we can click like this in our consciousness if we choose, and we can be living in the days when they constructed the pyramid. We can be living in the days when the first atom was saying to itself, I'm lonely, you know. We can be living in the days when those things have, and be there and have every speck of information, every ounce or every bit of it, totally lucid to us, totally aware to us, so that we know it. Now, if we can do that, and that's exciting, but not something all of us are that excited about, why don't we just take this infinite knowledge of the universe, this infinite mind, and use this infinite mind to create the awareness of who we are, our original purity and integrity, of our original self. Why don't we take this infinite mind and draw upon it, and it is untouched by anything. No hacker can get into that mind. We think they can with the brainwashing and other things, but they can't. They can only get in there with our permission. Right now, the hackers can only get on our computers with our permission too, because we know that they're there, we know how they get on our computers, and we still let them on. Reverend Pamela Wangler, you have just received $60 million. Open this letter and find out the details on picking up your fortune. So Pam says, wow, wow, wow. And Richard says, don't do it, don't do it. And she says, wow, 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 don't do it, don't do it. And so in the middle of the night, Pam goes into the computer and turns it on. And when she turns it on, she finds out it's a virus.
It's a virus that has gotten through because it got to her vanity. It got to her desire for being a wealthy lady, easy, quick way. And there is no easy, quick way. There is no easy, quick way to be a wealthy lady. You already are a wealthy lady. And you want to reveal what you are. You don't want somebody else's money. You don't want someone else's ideas. You don't want someone else's genius. You don't want someone else's intelligence. You want your own. And this is the big part of our story now. We can go to all the doctors on earth and be healed. And then have the same problem come back again as we have that condition of thought that brought it to us in the first place. We can go to Richard and Pamela here and the rest of you who are in the psychic healing activity, and we can be healed of some situation. But shortly thereafter, as our thought goes back into the same pattern that brought it to us before, up it comes again. Pam, help me, Pam. And so Pam says, look, I'm sick of you asking for my help. You know how to do it yourself. Now, pick up your bed and walk out of here. And they pick up their bed and walk out of here. What happened? What happened? What happened? You know. But the thing is, you want to start speaking for yourself. You have this genius within you. It's not just Einstein. He got credit. It's not just Mozart for his beautiful music and his writing. He got credit. It's not just for Richard Bach. He got credit for listening to a voice. It's just not that this woman, Ramtha, who built up her great operation out of having someone speak through her. It's when we speak ourselves that we're the genius. You see, I think one of the biggest problems that we all have, and it stems back to our dear friend Jesus. Jesus said, it is not I, but the Father within me who doeth the works. And this is correct, but it is misunderstood. You are the Father. You are the Father that Jesus was speaking to. Jesus said, go to the Father in secret, who will reward thee openly. The Father is within. In every man is the kingdom of God, where the Father dwells. And you see, these were alliterations, these were illustrations, these were stories that the people could understand and they could flow with at that time, because they didn't have what you got today. They didn't have books. They didn't have magazines. They didn't have television. They didn't have tape. They didn't have CDs. They didn't have any of that stuff. In fact, they didn't even have the truth. They didn't even have the truth. Because what Jesus said was recorded 50 years after he left. And it was recorded by people that never lived in his time and his generation. But they were people who were illumined. And they wrote down what they believed he said and what he believed he did. And one person wrote it down, and then three others copied it and wrote it down in their own way and tried to have it a little bit different so that it would look different. But then they didn't have writing in those days. There was people just didn't know how to read. Only a few very special people knew how to read. And there were people who could basically keep books for their accountants so that the merchant could keep track of how much he sold and how much he bought and where he went. But if you remember the story of the Jews, they had their Bible written in their mind. And they would teach the younger rabbis and so forth to memorize. Well, you can be sure that as they memorized it, they sometimes didn't get it right. And this incorrect philosophy comes down to us. But the correct philosophy is that there is one presence and one power, and that's the divine. And that's the God. That's the God that Jesus was talking about. This is the divine being that Jesus was talking about. This is the Father within you and me that he was talking about. And this is where we should go for our wisdom. Pam and Richard or myself or anybody of you who are working as teachers or anything, you are absolutely of no value to anybody else unless you can encourage them to go to the presence within for all knowledge. Now, Richard Bach got the presence for Jonathan Living Siegel within him. And many of these other famous Bible people, they got the information from within. They lived from within, and they studied from within, and they talked from within, and they spoke from within. And then there are many of the people that we read about, well, like our Mozart. His music was let it hurt. Why? He had a good headset. Stereo and everything. I think he probably had this latest Apple computer that's out now. And you just run the music into the computer and it prints it out on the sheet for you. Cool, huh? And everything, the treble and bass, everything, you know. And fantastic. Now, does it work? Sure it works. Do many people do it? Sure, more than you know. And how did it get started? Was that something new? It's been around for a long time. As long as computers have been around that have been able to handle it. And who wrote it? Probably Mozart. Some person who has this gifted understanding. And it's wonderful. You see, this is why we should begin to believe in ourselves. Begin to believe that the divine in you is pretty wonderful, pretty exciting. And the magic in you is pretty exciting. And just like Richard now, he decided that he's going to stop his tape on every 60 minutes or something like that, so he can, or 80 minutes, so he can get it onto his CD. And of course, Linda said she would show him how to do that. She has done the same thing. And knows exactly how to make the correction. But and then you have to tell me. But you see, these are things. Richard and I were just playing with the game last night and fooling with it. And as we fool with it, it took us into other areas and other little areas and other little areas until we were involving maybe two or three programs. And here we are, two adult beings playing with this computer like a bunch of kids saying, why doesn't this work? Press this button. Let's press by that button. No, go back to here. And then he's pointing. I was pointing. I said, now you sit down for a while. But you see, play the game. Play the game. If you can encourage your imagination to grow and spread out and be wonderful, then you'll have a great time. But if you don't, nothing happens. Nothing happens if you don't play the game. My son loved flying. And he made all sorts of airplanes, model planes and stuff. And as he made these, it was fun, but not enough. And so in school, his teacher in junior high said, get permission from your parents, I'm going to take you all up for a flight. He was a World War II pilot, and so he took them all up for a flight. And Mark came home from school and said, Dad, I want to learn how to fly. It's the most important thing in the world. I want to learn how to fly. And so we did. I immediately took him to learn how to fly. And he got his license when he was 13, I think it was. And he had to be 16 to get his license.
He was soloed.
He was soloed. And so he could fly without anyone else. But he couldn't fly anybody else until he got his license. So he soloed. And he's very good.
At the age of 13?
Yeah.
Is that allowed?
This is a number of years ago. He's 50 years old, remember?
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, you can't judge today by yesterday. But he did, and it was. And I bought him a plane. In fact, I bought him two planes. And he flew them until he just wore them out and had to put new engines in them and everything. And, you know, for that many years. And he just had fun, and he worked at the snack shop to earn money as a busboy to put gas in his planes. And he just had a lot of fun. But, you see, that was his love. And then he started designing airplanes. And when he designed airplanes, they were crude in the beginning, but they were crude only because he thought he couldn't design them classic. But the moment he believed in himself, his planes were exquisite, and he sold them everywhere. And then he decided to design an engine. He decided to do all this. Where did he get these ideas? He wasn't reading all these books. He wasn't reading all this. He was listening inside. And inside the ideas came. Now, that's what I want each of us to do. Listen inside and see the truth about ourselves, that we're whole and perfect. See the truth about who we are and what we are and all that sort of good stuff. And when you do that, then what happens to you? When you do that, then you're a free spirit. Then you're a free spirit. Like I said, all of these guys, Mozart wasn't so great. In fact, Mozart wasn't great at all. Mozart was just another Ramta. Mozart just wrote down what he heard. And as I say, now we can write it down with our computers. But he just wrote down what he heard. And he was good for his time. Very good for his time. And we can write down what we hear. We can live in this. But this is the imagination. He believed that what he heard was great, and he followed it. You can believe that your body is whole and perfect. You can believe that every organ, action, function of your body knows exactly what the right thing to do at the right time. You don't have to tell your body how to operate itself. You don't tell your body how to breathe. Your body knows how. Sometimes you forget, and one lady was telling me she had emphysema, and I said, "Well, good. In 5 years, it's supposed to be cleared out of your system." She said, "But it isn't." And I said, "Well, then let's clear it out." She said, "How?" I said, "Start deep breathing. Right up, pull it right off your top of your diaphragm. Pull it out. In, out. Oh, that hurts. Sure it hurts because you haven't used it. You know, you haven't gotten into the depths of your lungs there. Every day, 5 or 10 minutes, deep breathing and just breathe in. Get those lungs going. Get that going. And then once you have it going, say, praise God inside of me. And let go and let that divine inside of you encourage you to continue breathing. To continue breathing deeply and well and happily. The woman I told you about in Switzerland who had the cancer, and I had to get her deep breathing because her lung had stopped. And she did, and it hurt. But after a bit, it didn't hurt anymore. After a bit, it felt like she was reaching down and taking out all the old stuff that was crowded down in there and getting it going. And I said, "You know, your lung is not really a big sack. Your lung is a whole bunch of tubes. Your lung is made up of the blood vessels, capillaries, veins, all these gadgets and stuff going through there because it's moving the air in and out. It's not a bag to hold a lot of air. It's a bag to receive it and pump it, not to hold it." Right, doctor?
That's right.
Right. And so what we want to do, we want to let our body normally do whatever it's designed to do. Live in your original purity and integrity. Your body knows what to do. It's just that you have to get your bloated nothingness out of the way of your divine circuits so your body can function in its perfect normality. And this is what you want to do. This is how you want to have it. Now, I have rattled on here for a moment or two. Did anyone have any question that they wanted to ask about any of these things, or did you have a suggestion of how you have experienced wholeness by listening to the divine within you? Yes? Yes? Pam, did you have ever any experience of the wholeness within you being expressing itself so beautifully and so fantastically and so gloriously?
Often.
She says awesome and lots of them. Often. And, all right. Do you have any one experience that you'd like to relate to us that would give us a thought for ourselves?
Yeah, just like the stomach flu.
And loud enough to have it come through.
Just like the stomach flu I got, you know, now. Well, I was playing it real well. I was throwing up real good. Running to the bathroom, and finally the doctor said I had the stomach flu, and I got mad. So I went home, and I went down, and I really got in touch with God for about 4 hours, and I feel good.
When was this?
This week.
You don't even know about it, thank you, Ann.
That's why I wasn't here for a week.
Monday. or Sunday, or Mr. So I just went in, and like Herb says, you know, I just kept profoundly saying, and I go around all day, God, it feels good, it feels good, it feels good. Mine's a little different than hers. So I got that song, as you guys know, or money's flowing, God, money's in action. I love God, I love money, I love action. Money is God in action. So I do that one. And especially when I'm walking, which I haven't been doing a lot, but I'm going to get started back. So it's just knowing.
Oh, we had a good walk.
We had and you know something, I hadn't walked for 10 minutes in the last 3 weeks. When he told you guys I went up the mountain in San Diego, Queen of Mapa, you know how high that is. It's 5, 6, 7,000 feet up. I had not exercised in 20 years. I had just lost about 85 pounds. So my legs had not had any exercise. My back had been out for 5, 10 years. I had no way. And I looked at that mountain and I thought, there is no way you're going to stop me.
But you did it.
I did it. And I stopped 3 times, took a deep breath, rested about 2 minutes. I said, let's go. And Larry says, you sure? I says, let's go.
She wouldn't even use my golf cart.
No. So, you know, I think that we can put our minds to anything.
Well, it's not a matter of putting our minds to it. It's a matter of realizing that that's our natural way. Now, putting our minds to it is good. It's a good phrase. But people are kind of uptight with the idea of mind over matter.
The mind of God.
Put the mind of God at it. There you go.
Right.
That's good. Good illustration. Anybody else with a beautiful illustration?
Michelle went up the mountain with us last time, up A Mountain over here.
Yeah.
Who else went with us? Tino?
Linda did?
We all went up A Mountain. We had a group and it was like, let's do it. And so we went up that mountain over there and it was even raining.
Super. Super. That's great. So what do you think? Do you think that you can put this healing practice into work for yourself?
I want to. I want to, for some reason, and my intention is all there. But I find that it doesn't connect fast enough. You know, I could sit there, it just doesn't connect fast enough. So my intention is there, I just don't know how long I have to wait for it to happen. So I sit with that, like, okay, I'll do that, I'll do that. Well, it's in divine order, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. You know, and I just deep in my heart don't know how or when it's going to work. So that's where the you know, the resistance comes in that I think contradicts that those thoughts of I'm whole and perfect. So that's what I have to deal with.
Yeah.
I'm there at the get-go. Okay, I'm whole and perfect, and then like, you know, a couple of weeks. Or
when
of weeks.
Have you ever said you wanted to play the piano?
Yeah.
Or anything?
Yeah, that's not a good one for me.
I'm sorry?
That's not a good one for me. Paint. I like to paint.
Paint?
Yeah.
And do you paint?
Yeah. And I never really had
lessons.
No, I did. You know, when I was young, I didn't. It wasn't until college that, you know, I got.
And then what did you do?
And I studied.
Are you painting now?
No, I have a thing full of storage.
You have a what?
I have a storage full of large canvases. And
I see. But you yourself are not expressing your own genius on canvas.
Not now,
mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. And if you express your own genius on canvas, what sort of things would you be expressing?
I should make them in. Usually they're figures coming out of spirit.
Figures coming out of what?
Figures coming out of spirit.
Figures coming out of what?
Spirit.
Spirit.
Yeah.
Figures coming out of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, figures coming out of your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of figures are these?
They're abstract figures. I mean, I've studied anatomy, so you could...
Well, yes, they're properly done.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, are they ones that generate the consciousness of love, of peace, of harmony, of wisdom, of wholeness, and so forth?
They're just lovely.
They're just lovely, yeah, without generating anything, huh?
Not No, they
generate lumber. Oh, they do. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that that is a blessing to be able to do that?
I think so, yeah.
And do you think that it would improve you as a person to be able to do that? If you did that, you would become more illumined yourself?
I just enjoy it.
I'm sorry?
I enjoy it.
You do that?
I enjoy it.
You enjoy it?
I enjoy mm-hmm. it.
Well,
I'm
then,
in the mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then, if these are things that really tune you in and turn you on, these are things that you want to follow. And you want to follow it by doing it, not so much that you sell other people's pictures and promote other people, but do your own. And you'll find that you have a genius that you never expected, just like Wordsworth, you know, and just like many of the other great poets who put drawings in with their poetry. They were exquisite, you know. And I think that you have that healing touch through your pictures that could be very beneficial to you and to whoever looked at them if you wanted to use it. But are you strong enough to put forth the effort that it takes to do that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It could be a lot of fun.
Okay, but when I came in, what I initially said was, you know, when I'm concentrated on something and then I want to fix it, a situation, a physical situation, and I start with, I'm whole and perfect, okay, all is in divine order. I find that after like a couple of weeks, I sabotage it by going, oh, what is this going to happen? What am I going to fix this? What, you know, I can't stay with it.
Same thing you do with your paintings.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You see, you allow yourself to be distracted.
Okay.
And every distraction you have is tremendously important. Like, it's very important to be distracted by the mouse running across the floor. You know, that poor cake didn't have a chance. But, you see, that's stupid. I mean, we should be more in control than when we see a mouse. Oh, that's interesting, you know. These are things that are happening in our life by our creation to distract us from doing that which we could really benefit ourselves with and have fun doing. And it's for you, not for anybody else. The pictures that you paint are for you. If you paint them for anybody else, you might as well just do copy work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you are telling us, as we have experienced it ourselves, that you get started and then you get distracted,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't conclude what you wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
and you don't get what you wanted to work on, your healing or whatever it may be. And this is what all of us do. We have these distractions that we call sex. We have these distractions we call drinking. We have these distractions we call party, you know, party, 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 any time for a party, you know. We have these distractions that we call golf, you know, or tennis, or other boating, you know. Now, your two-story boat there that you took out on the lake or on the river, I'm sure that was an extremely great distraction.
Absolutely.
That took him away from many of his studies and many of his work, but he loved it. And you know what happened? He built it. And he sailed it, and he floated it, and he used it, because he would not let any distractions keep him from doing that boat. And it was a great lot of fun, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And he still thinks about it with great joy. But you see, he didn't let the distractions keep him from it, and he could have, because, you know, as he told us, the boat sold after 6 years, and the first year it had many leaks in it. The second year it had fewer, next year fewer, the next year fewer, and the fifth year just one leak.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, what is he saying by giving us this reiteration of leaks? What he's saying is that the great amount of work that it took on the boat was reduced each year, because when there were less leaks, you had less plugging to do and less searching to do for the leaks and getting them cleaned up. But those are distractions. And then, at the end of the fifth or sixth year, what did he do? It wasn't fun anymore. There was no challenge to it.
There's no excitement to it. He says it's because it's too much work, it's this and that and the other thing. But the excitement is gone. I was making a great deal of money in real estate in Corona del Mar in Newport Beach. And for years and years and years, I sold real estate very effectively and very efficiently, earning a great deal of money. And I got to the top of the salesman's club every year for a couple of years, you know, the $1 million club and stuff like that. And after a while, where's the fun of this? You know, where's the challenge? So then I went into doing other things. But you see, we don't really want to become what's called a success in something, like make a lot of money. We want to have the challenges and the joy, the temptations or distractions, and handle them masterfully, you know, be untouched by them. And so all of these gifts that we have, our ability to handle them and our ability to work with them shows merely where we are in our spiritual consciousness, on our level of awareness of who we are and what concerns us. What disturbs you? When you look at a person, do you look at their eyes and say, wow? Or do you look at their body and their clothing and the various things they have on and you say, you don't have very good taste, you know. You may think it, not say it, you know. But to even think it is merely showing where your judgment was. When you look at the Mona Lisa, what do you look at?
Her eyes.
Her eyes. Another person looks at the Mona Lisa, they look at the lips, and then they paint a smile on her face. Or they paint something on her that's not there that they put in their mind. And another person will look at her and will see her like Whistler's mother, you know. And people will see what they want to see in there. Now, who is the most blessed person, you might say, when they look at a painting like Mona Lisa? Is the one who sees their eyes. The one who sees the radiance and the beauty. Everything else is extra. You all know Leonardo da Vinci. He lived next door to you, I know him. And he's a good guy. Well, Leonardo worked for years and years and years and years and years to become a very excellent painter and to become a good sculptor and so forth. And when he did one of his great tasks, what was the name of that? Do you remember? David was great, but the Sistine Chapel, you know, David he did by himself, but the Sistine Chapel, what did he do? He had a whole bunch of clones with him, boys who had trained, men who trained as artists, and he had them fill in the spaces. He did the paintings of the principal figures. He did the paintings of the principal. He did the outline, basically. And then he had his staff fill in the holes. And this is where we are. Filling in the holes can be a distraction. Have you finished your painting when you have the figure of God there, reaching out to touch the hand of Adam? Who cares what's in the background? You see, the minute you become distracted by the background, then you haven't finished your painting. You have to still do the work. And so, I think in photography for camcorder and video recording, the using of a blue screen behind a person when you're photographing him, and then allowing you to run another type of film behind that of landscape or something like that, it's quite charming. But you see, the blue, when you have a blue behind, and that is what you have no distractions. And the minute you run a landscape behind, what have you got? You got a distraction. And lots of distractions. So you better be a good talker, because they'll be watching the landscape and forgetting all about you. So, any other comment here? Healing is a very simple thing. It merely means that you keep yourself one-pointed on whatever you want, you know. Did you ever write a book? Did you think your book was okay? Did you enjoy reading your book?
Sorry.
And now you just set it aside as something you'd done, and it's over with. Now, what do you think of when you think of your book? You think that that was fun, and it's done. No.
I didn't see it as fun.
I'm sorry?
I didn't see it as fun. I did not see it as fun.
You didn't think it was fun? Oh, that's a shame. But that's your privilege. I would have thought it was fun. I know I've written many books, and I enjoyed each one, but I have no interest in rereading them. And people say to me, well, what did you write? I said, read the book and see, you know. But, and you know, some poets, they can tell you what poetry they have written, and they can tell it to you over and over again. And I say, don't you ever write any new stuff, you know? But, no, I write it, and I let it go. I release it. And that's the fun of it. That's the fun of it. And I think you're more of a that person than you let on. Tough tiger.
See, he did that painting too.
You did that painting? You did that painting? You said you wrote a book. You paint too, huh? Now, what was your intent in doing that painting? What was the feeling that you wanted to project?
A decoration for myself.
A decoration for yourself. That's great. Now, what do you think it does in this room?
I was asked to bring it to the church, so I don't know what they have.
Well, I'm not asking you. You've already said it's a decoration for yourself. That's okay. Now, anyone make a comment as to what does that do to this room? Is that a healing light? Is that a healing consciousness? Or is that a abstract bit of art that causes you to think many thoughts at the same time?
All the above.
All of the above. You are wise. All of the above, yes. Yes, that's true, all of the above. And also, as he did it himself, just for the fun of it. That's good. Well, you're certainly leaving your mark around the world, aren't you?
We'll find out.
Yes, you am. Beautiful. So, any other thoughts from anybody? If not, we'll take a pause and have our lunch and do whatever comes after that. And I am here for you to ask any questions if you want. And I'm here to love you and to tell you how wonderful you are. And I think that Linda and I have got a thing going here.
Yeah, I'm on the camera.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Isn't that light?
It is.
Yeah, and there is a bigger battery. And then this is the 20 gigabyte, and the other is the 30 gigabyte. But the 20 gigabyte, perfectly big enough for running off a couple of hours of filming, and then putting it on your your PC, and then
does it take long to transfer? Does it take long to transfer?
I don't know. I've never done it. I'm still learning to use it.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't figured out how to do everything yet.
Oh, okay.
And the book in the book there, it tells you how long it takes to transfer things, you know. But I think it says like an hour and a half for 4 hours or something like that.
Okay, so it's not real time.
No. Thank you very much. We will see you after lunch.